It's lights out and away we go.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Away We Go podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel and lifestyle surrounding the sport. My name's Diane Bortoletto, and today I'm in Margaret River. And welcome back to the show, Kira Gillen from Formula Live Pulse. Great to see you.
Thank you for having me back. Great to be back. What a special day.
It really is. This is monumental, like absolutely amazing, because we've just had, well, it used to be called the Spanish Grand Prix, but it's now called the Barcelona Catalunya Grand Prix, because Ferrari has broken a 595-day drought from their last race win. Lewis Hamilton on the top step. I could not believe my eyes, and I've never been happier.
It was magical. I've been thinking about it, what would be the one word I would describe that race, and honestly, it was magical. I didn't see it coming. I did my predictions on both our platforms, and Hamilton was not there. I think I had him in third, and I just didn't see that coming, and it was so magical to watch.
It was, yes. So Lewis Hamilton from Ferrari, this is his first race win in, I want to say, well over 670 days.
So it was 31 races for Ferrari, and the last time he officially won was Belgium in 2025, but the one that he actually won is on the podium himself. It was Silverstone. Well, he won Silverstone, but he also won Belgium by default because Russell was disqualified. So Belgium, obviously, was after that year. But it's 31 races with Ferrari.
Fantastic. And this is his first race win with Ferrari in Spain at the Barcelona track. It was Michael Schumacher's first race win for Ferrari at the same track, almost to the day, 30 years apart. If you don't get goosebumps thinking of that, you're just not human.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Like, it's two greats.
Two goats.
Yeah, two goats, you know.
He's the only driver in the world to have won in Barcelona seven times. Yeah, and that was Macca's record as well, was six times in Barcelona. And yeah, Lewis has surpassed that. It was phenomenal. Like, okay, so Lewis finished on the top step for Ferrari. George Russell finished in second in Mercedes, which probably not really deserved, but that's where he ended up. Lando Norris finished in McLaren in third. Max Verstappen fourth, Red Bull Racing. Oscar Piastri in the McLaren in fifth. Isaac Hadjar in Red Bull Racing in sixth, Pierre Gasly in the Alpine in seventh, Liam Lawson Racing Bulls in eighth, his teammate Arvid Lindblad in ninth, and Franco Colapinto snuck into the top 10 there in the other Alpine. So that's the top 10. George Russell took pole position for this race, right? And which was a bit of a blow because we were all on the Kimi Antonelli train, I suppose, and hoping that Kimi would continue his winning streak, because that is such a lovely story and just felt really wholesome, and Kimi had the momentum. It was fantastic as a spectator to watch, and obviously totally biased Italian not to be. Lewis Hamilton qualified in second and Kimi Antonelli qualified in third. Then Lando, Max, Isaac, Oscar in seventh, Liam Lawson in eighth, Nico Hülkenberg in ninth, and Charles Leclerc qualified in 10th because he went off and had a crashed into the wall during Q3. So he didn't even get a lap time in, which is why he started in 10th. Now let's just break down this race. I've got to admit, the first half I was yawning. I found it pretty boring.
Oh my God. No, how? Okay. So I don't know what the commentators on Sky were saying. Okay. But I was watching Lewis. Okay. So when Lewis didn't take the lead, I thought, oh no. Okay, oh no, nothing's going to happen here, okay? Yep. And when they pitted on lap 12, which was literally the borderline of when you pit, it was for softs. Oh my God, yep. This is going to be a long race for Ferrari, okay?
And then he pitted early, right?
He pitted early. So he pitted basically on the border. And I think it was 12 to lap 15 for softs or something like. So it was just the earliest you could go. He did it and was like, oh my God, what the hell? And then Mercedes covered him off. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. And then Lewis came out on these mediums and he was flying. There was just something. I was watching Lewis. Mercedes were like, oh, Norris this, Norris that, Norris is your concern that. Obviously, they were also concerned about Kimi as well. But I was watching Lewis fly through that thing and I thought, oh my God, Ferrari are on a mission. That man is on a mission. So for me, that became interesting. You know, and obviously, the first stint and whatever else, you thought, okay, Mercedes are going to just be away with this. I don't know. I had an eye on Lewis, and I thought something special is happening here. I think the other thing was that really, what really shocked me was the determination. I had not seen Ferrari that clear, that determined in so long. That strategy was like, we know exactly what we're doing. We're going to hit it and we're not going to be afraid. And it was really like, we're coming for you, Mercedes. You're either going to swerve or you're going to come.
Swerve first or go head on.
Exactly. And in the first one, they went, okay, we're going to match you. And they pitted George. And even George said, oh, are we doing a three stopper here? Like, what's going on? You know, he was like, why the hell are we pitting so early? And then they didn't pit in the second time. And I thought, oh, you're not paying attention, boys. Mercedes, you are not paying attention.
Yeah, Lewis, he did a three stopper, which I don't think anyone was really expecting, but the track temperature was like 50 degrees. It was so hot. So the tyres were really struggling to, I suppose, last any kind of distance. Lewis was first to pit around, like you said, around lap 12. Then he pitted again. Lewis's second pit stop was lap 27, which again, with a race with 66 laps in total, like that's still like pitting at lap 27 is really early, especially for those conditions because it was hot, like I said, and the tyres were struggling in the heat.
I remember thinking, there's no way this guy is going to survive 30 something laps. I remember thinking, he's going to have to pit again. And I was nervous about the fact that they pitted. But I thought when I saw him speeding through, he was cutting the times off whoever was ahead of him. And I was like, oh my God, these guys, he is so fast.
And then when he came in for a third pit stop, I was like, oh my God, everybody, you better. That's when I started really perking up and paying attention, because up until that point, George Russell had been mostly in the lead most of the time. And, you know, I was not overly excited about that, I'll admit. After that third pit stop, oh my God, that Ferrari was on rails. Lewis was just increasing his lead every single lap. He was on fire, and honest to God, it was just a beautiful thing to watch.
100%. Do you know what he said in the interview afterwards? He said, because everyone was talking about how that they, on the third stop, they had the VSC. And so, you know, they caught a break and they pitted on the VSC. And I remember thinking before that, I was thinking, when, because I knew the same as you, I was like, oh my God, he's going to have to stop a third time. There's no way he's going to do 40 something laps or whatever on those mediums. But I was looking at him thinking, okay, he will probably be fast enough. Like maybe he'll pit around the time that George pits so that he'll have the better chance or whatever, you know. But anyway, got the VSC, got very lucky and was like 2 seconds ahead and then just continued on. But he actually said afterwards, he said, we were robbed by that VSC of a chance to have a battle. And I thought, that is a man with confidence. That is a man who knew that he had a fast enough car to take on those Mercedes.
Yeah.
Where did this come from?
He had the lead before the VSC, before the virtual safety car. I don't think it would have changed the result at all. Lewis still would have taken that top step. And just watching how emotional that he got, watching him pour his emotions into, you know, his mechanics and the team when he was up on the podium, you could tell how much that meant to him. And, you know, the fact that he thanked his fans and said that they were the reason that he was able to pull himself out of the dark place he was in. Because last year was the worst season in the history of the planet for Lewis Hamilton and Ferrari. It was really hard to watch as a Ferrari fan. It was almost like being an Essendon fan to all our Australian listeners. But, oh my God, it feels good to be back.
Yeah. So maybe this is the moment that I say this, okay? I have to hold my hands up for last week because you did say the Lewis Hamilton effect. And the minute you said that, I was like, oh yes, you're right. And it is true. The Lewis Hamilton effect. It has only taken him a year and a half. But I'm so glad to see Ferrari listening to him. I'm so glad that Fred Vasseur didn't take in this amazing, talented 7-time world champion and not listen to him. You know, maybe a lot of people don't know this, but Ferrari are an institution. Okay, so right, if there's any new Formula One fans out there, Ferrari is an institution. They've done things the same way for years and years. And Simone, my boyfriend's Italian, so I learn a lot about Ferrari more and more with him. And so bringing in someone like Lewis, who's British, first of all, who's got different culture, different experiences, you know, it's a shock to the system, both for them and for Lewis, you know? Mm. But he's won 7 championships. He is the GOAT. He is a master. As you mentioned, Michael Schumacher got his first win with Ferrari in 1996. He didn't win his first championship until 2000. It took him 4 years. That's how long it took him to change things in Ferrari to get that championship. Now, I'm hoping it's not going to take Lewis 4 years, but they're an institution. They're an institution and they're hard to change.
And it's fantastic. And like, just, you know, because you're going out with an Italian, but the Italian mentality and the way Italians operate generally in life is very specific and often very different to how British people operate. So that massive cultural divide would have been, you know, last year that bridge didn't reach across the other side. You know, there was just communication breakdowns consistently throughout the races between Lewis and his race engineer, obviously the way they're working. And if last year it honestly felt like that Ferrari was not listening to Lewis, but obviously it's just taken some time to implement the changes, or maybe it's taken some time to accept that, oh, hey, this guy knows what he's talking about, we should really pay attention. But it's brilliant. Even Charles Leclerc commented on how Lewis has changed the team, and he said, having Lewis in the team has changed my opinion or my perception of what this job as a Ferrari driver is, because I've never seen the team push so hard, be so positive. And that's the Lewis effect. You know, the other thing that Lewis did was he changed his brakes, and that happened, I think, three races ago. And Ferrari have had the same brake supplier years, like decades.
Yeah, and 50 years, I think it was.
You know, that supplier relationship with Ferrari is deeply ingrained. And last week, when Charles crashed out of the Monaco race, he was critical of the brakes publicly. And he said that he wanted Lewis's setup. So, yeah, Lewis knows what he's doing. He knows how to win, and he's showing Ferrari the way. And oh my God, this honestly could be the year for his eighth. It really could. Because, you know, our favorite young Italian driver that's been, you know, rewriting the history books this year, honked out, didn't he? DNF. Kimi Antonelli did not finish the race. So that's a bunch of points that he lost. I was absolutely gutted for him. But I was so excited for Lewis that I kind of didn't pay too much more. I didn't dwell on the Kimi Antonelli retirement too much, because I was so excited for Ferrari and Lewis. Also, you know, Charles Leclerc, another DNF this week.
Yeah. Okay, let's start with Charles for a second, because I'm really glad to hear you say that, to him talk about the impact of Lewis and the changes and the positive result that having Lewis and the team had made, because Charles has done now two races and he's crashed, I think, in both qualies. I think he crashed. No, he didn't crash in quali in Monaco, but he crashed somewhere, I think, in maybe in a free practice or something. So he's had a mare of the last two races. And I was a little bit worried that, oh my God, was he starting to subconsciously feel the pressure of seeing Lewis do well? Because obviously Lewis is second in the championship. He's had two second podiums. Lewis is on this nice little streak. And Charles has been the baby and the darling of Ferrari for a very long time. So I was a little bit worried. So I was really glad to hear that, because I think the thing is that really the reality is that Charles needs to sit up and pay attention. And like, Charles is not a stupid guy, and he is a very, what's the word, modest and honest person. So I would be shocked if he wasn't doing this. But seeing Lewis now and seeing the impact and the changes that he's finally making within that team, you got to be looking at him and saying, how can I learn? How can I learn from this world champion?
And I honestly feel like that is Charles's mindset, because he, you know, was very complimentary to Lewis in this interview that I saw. And I just thought, that's just brilliant. And you want to take every opportunity to learn. It's so good that Charles doesn't have the ego of, I've been in Ferrari for 7 years, 8 years, whatever it is. You know, I know what's what. I know how they work. Lewis is coming in and he's making changes, and those changes are paying dividends, as I suggested last week. I want to say I told you so.
Well, listen, look, I agree with you about the Lewis impact. I do. But I was worried that Charles wasn't getting that. I was also worried that the Lewis impact wasn't actually making inroads within Ferrari. I love Ferrari. I would love to see back Ferrari back to his glory days. For me, the biggest crime would be Charles Leclerc ending his Formula One career and not winning a world championship. I would love to see him. I just was a little bit worried that Ferrari wasn't following through, that they had this mentality of, we won world championships over the years and we know what we're doing and we don't need to change. And it's like, well, you haven't won since 2007. So come on, you know.
Has it been that long? Wow.
Yeah.
19 years. Wow.
Yeah. Kimi Raikkonen. God. Yeah. There you go.
The last time that Ferrari won a race was Mexico 2024, 2 years ago. So it's been a dry 2 years for Ferrari fans, and we are celebrating as we should. So that's brilliant. But Charles had an awful race. He lost hydraulics in his steering, didn't he? That's right.
It's disappointing for Ferrari because of the points. He wasn't in a bad place. He had beaten Piastri, so he was, you know, going to be fourth or fifth or something. He was going to be fifth, I think. So he wasn't doing too badly. He was doing a really good stint on those mediums after actually in the beginning. He only pitted twice, actually. He had two really good stints. And then after that, he just sat behind Verstappen and didn't seem to be making any inroads towards him. Even Verstappen was getting faster towards the end of his last stint, which was mad. But yeah, Charles could have got some nice points for the championship, which is very disappointing.
Yeah.
The only good thing is that Mercedes also DNF'd. So they only had one driver getting points. So it was, you know, because Ferrari are not that far behind them in the championship.
In the Constructors' Championship, we've got Mercedes on 262 points. Then we've got Ferrari trailing on 190 points. So that's, what, a 72-point difference. Remembering that it's 25 points for a win, 18 points for second, 15 points for third, and it goes down from there. McLaren are on 141, so they're trailing Ferrari by 49 points. Maths on the go, my God. Red Bull Racing on 89 points, Alpine on 57, Venice Racing Bulls, Haas, Williams, Audi, Aston Martin, Cadillac, zero. No points for Cadillac, 1 point for Aston Martin. And that was Fernando Alonso last week in Monaco. Now, Alonso has come out and said that this is probably going to be his last Grand Prix in Barcelona. When I first saw that, I was like, no, he's going to retire. No. But then I remembered that Barcelona is doing alternate years with Zandvoort, the Dutch Grand Prix. So for next year, there'll be no Barcelona Grand Prix. It'll be in the Netherlands. And 2 years from now, Fernando Alonso's thinking, it's probably unlikely I'll still be driving.
Have you heard the rumours? So
yes.
The rumour...
Go. Let's see the same.
So I heard the same thing and thought, oh my God, no, he's going to retire, but then realised the same thing as well. And then I heard the rumour that apparently he's being seduced, courted, whatever, by his conflict of interest manager, Briatore, to go back to Alpine, which I think is absolutely hilarious, seeing as he dropped Alpine in his dust. But apparently now Aston Martin are trying to woo him with a big role within Aston Martin to keep him. So I don't know what's going on, but Fernando Alonso, I don't think anytime soon.
No, I mean, Alonso has said in the past that he'll be with Aston Martin for pretty much the rest of his Formula One days, if not driving, then another role within the team. But, you know, if Flavio's waving a big check and, you know, they've got history, you know, Crashgate together as well, who knows? Who knows? I mean, it'd be quite something for Fernando to change teams at, what, 45 or however old he is. It's nuts.
I love how you just dropped that little dagger, Crashgate.
If you don't know what Crashgate is, look it up. It is the most controversial thing to ever happen in Formula One. And the fact that Flavio Briatore is even in the paddock is something else. So,
yes.
Yeah. Well, after all that and the retirements and Lewis picking up 25 points with the win, the driver standings at the moment, we've still got Kimi Antonelli leading the Drivers' Championship on 156, Lewis Hamilton 115. So there's 41 points between them at the moment, which is less than two race wins and two DNFs. So it's still a gap, but it's at this point in the season after seven races when we've got another... 15 races to go. So there's still plenty of opportunity for this to swing around. In third place is George Russell on 106, Charles Leclerc is on 75, Lando Norris on 73, quite close, and Oscar Piastri on 68. Oh, so positions 4, 5, and 6 are pretty close. And then Max Verstappen in 7th place on 55 points.
Yeah.
And then Pierre Gasly in 8th in the Alpine in 41 points, which is... Anyway,
wow.
So that's the drivers. Yes, I know.
While we're talking about Gasly, I just wanted to mention the controversial, in my opinion, decision to give him the 3rd place podium from Monaco. I just think like... I get why they appealed it. I get why they were given it. But I think it's very unfair to everybody else who did it, who served their penalties, one of which was Oscar, who deucedly served his penalty. He should have been on the podium. And George also should have been on the podium as well. So I think that it seemed a very unfair thing to say, oh yeah, hey, we recognize that there was a mechanical fault with our system and therefore we're going to take back the 2 speeding penalties. But we're going to leave it with everybody else. You know what I mean? Even though it's the exact same, they got faulted for the exact same reason.
Exactly. So just backtracking for anybody that missed it. What happened in Monaco was that the timing system in the pit lane was, you know, you enter the pit lane at point A, you stop at pit, you know, point B, and your speed is calculated. Mm-hmm. But it was not accurate. And the FIA were dishing out penalties for speeding in the pit lane like nobody's business in Monaco. And as a result of all those 5-second penalties, most of the drivers served those. So like you said, Oscar Piastri served his 5-second penalty. George got 2 5-second penalties. He got 1 for speeding in the pit lane. And then when he pitted, when they double stacked under a safety car, the team just pitted George and he didn't serve his 5-second penalty. So he got another penalty on top of that for not serving his... So what the FIA have said, because Alpine protested or appealed the 5-second penalty. And the FIA somehow, remarkably, have done a total backflip. They reversed the penalty for Pierre Gasly, but they haven't reversed the penalty for everybody else. And they're saying that they can't because drivers serve their penalty. So what this means for the future is that if drivers are given a 5-second penalty for speeding in the pit lane or other penalties that might be able to be appealed post-race, I think drivers are not going to serve that penalty because once the penalty's served, there's no room for appeal. Like the FIA can't change the outcome. But and what sort of precedent does that set? I think it's a very slippery slope and I think the FIA have made an absolute balls up of this decision. It's not good.
Yeah, no, 100% agree with you, 100%. Obviously, I feel for Gasly and I, you know, obviously would love for him to have gotten that podium. And that's the reason why he's on 43 points, by the way, because he got himself a lovely 15 points from that podium. But the reality is, without the other penalties for the other drivers, Gasly wouldn't have been in 3rd. So it's not really a fair, accurate situation. I mean, I even saw an interview with Colapinto and he was like, yeah, we were fighting for trying to be on the podium. And I'm like, dude, what are you on about? The Alpine is definitely in a better shape than it was last year, but you're not podium guys just yet. You really aren't. And that was a fluke. And it was really because other drivers suffered the same fate as you, but they decided to serve their penalties.
They did the right thing and served their penalty, which is what you're supposed to do during a race, not serve the penalty. I hope the FIA do put out a ruling about this and amend the rules because otherwise it's just set up a precedent for race results to be a total mess. You know, the sad thing is, yeah, you're right, with Pierre Gasly, he probably wouldn't have got the podium had all the penalties been reversed. You know, all those penalties weren't served up in the first place. It's really sad, though, to have 3rd place in Monaco, of all places, and not get that glory of being on the podium, you know, and having that 3rd place awarded after everything's all over. Yeah. When I saw that, I was floored. I could not believe the FIA would do such a thing. They're normally so strict and so, what's the word? Militant in their decisions. That's exactly right. They're normally so militant in their decisions that I was absolutely gobsmacked to see that they had reversed that decision. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. But McLaren and Red Bull have appealed that appeal from Gasly, but I haven't seen the outcome of that yet.
I don't think their appeals are going to amount to anything. I think I said this during the podcast last week. I was shocked that FIA didn't stop and go, hang on a second, we've had 3 people with speeding fines or whatever. there must be something going wrong here. And also, I hadn't realized that they, because I don't know if we talked about this at the time, but they changed the length of the pit lane because of the additional team. So they had made it different. And they had said to the, like, the whole system, they should have been flagged.
Absolute bullshit.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, they have changed the length of it. They said to the drivers, don't cut the corners. So I think there was a kind of a thought process that the drivers had been cutting the corners, and that's what the issue was. But I think it transpired that they weren't actually cutting the corners. It was a technical fault. As you said, they're not standing there with a speed gun. Yeah, I just think it's such a balls up. And I really feel for Hajar, but at least he got the celebration. He didn't get the trophy in the end, but he got the celebration. He can pretend he got P3.
I know. Just the whole thing is just an absolute mess. And let's just hope that the FIA and Formula One and all the teams come to their senses and the FIA puts out some clear rules about this, so this never happens again, and that the FIA and Formula One adopt cutting-edge technology, which the sport is known for, to measure these things. Accurately.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not asking too much. If the police can do it in every single country around the world, surely the FIA can do it, right?
100%.
Oh. Rant over.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. But okay, so let's go back to Mercedes. We mentioned, obviously, Kimi DNF'd, but I just wanted to talk about George and George's performance, and then also about Kimi's overtake, where he went second. And I just thought, I do think Kimi is unleashed. I think, you know, George is obviously looking now in a situation in third in the championship going, okay, I have Hamilton to worry about. Never thought that was going to happen. I have a 19-year-old teammate to worry about. Never thought that was going to happen. So I'd say he's sitting there going, and in many ways now the pressure is off George, because now George can go, okay, I'm third. Let's see what happens. You know what I mean? That should have been a race for him for the taking, that race.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I think Mercedes messed up on the strategy. I think in a way, Mercedes was under a lot of pressure. If they had gone for the three-stop, they were worried about Kimi coming. And then George would have been like, why do we go for a three-stop and give the win to Kimi? But then going for the two-stop, they just didn't prepare for Hamilton at all.
I think Hamilton really threw them off. Hamilton really threw off Mercedes' strategy by pitting so early first time and then pitting again in fairly quick succession the second time. And Mercedes had to respond. Yeah. They just had to respond. They couldn't give Lewis the advantage with fresh tyres. I feel like that once Lewis did that first pit stop, they were just chasing their tails and it just threw everything out of sync for them.
Yeah, and that's why my admiration for Ferrari just like swells in that race, because I just felt, oh, they are people with a mission. They are laying down a statement and they're like, we're doing a three-stopper and either come get us or snooze and lose kind of thing, you know? Even Verstappen cheekily said afterwards, we had the winning strategy. You know what I mean? Because they did a three-stopper as well. So, But I think George, I do think there's a difference between George and Kimi's car. It's not just about, obviously, that pace, but like the fact that Kimi overtook him. He waited. Because Kimi was driving erratically. Let's admit it. He was getting black and white flags, so close to getting a penalty for going over track limits. But he still managed to stay calm and overtake George. And if it wasn't for that technical fault, he would have finished in P2. Where he kind of rightly should have been from the performance of the race.
Exactly, exactly right. So Kimi, no doubt about it, outdrove George Russell all race. Yes, he was pushing and yes, he did do some track limit infringements, but he didn't get a penalty and then he didn't finish the race either. So that was really quite sad for Kimi. It'll be interesting to see how he bounces back from that, because he just was riding that wave, right? Speaking of waves, I've got to give a shout out to Leo Fioranti, who is an Italian surfer who, for the first time in the history of the world, an Italian surfer has won a World Surf League Championship Tour event, the El Salvador Pro. Little digress there, but it was such a weekend of sport, and the Socceroos won as well in the World Cup. So, yeah, it was just such a great weekend of sport. Okay.
Loves.
I feel like George got lucky getting that second place in Barcelona, and, you know, that's what happens in racing. It swings around and goes around. Sometimes the luck falls your way and sometimes it doesn't.
McLaren have had some huge reliability issues as well. You know, I think Nara said this was the first race in a while that he'd actually finished, you know, So, because he didn't finish, he DNF'd in Monaco, and he DNF'd in one of the other races. So, yeah.
And it's really been nondescript. You know, Barcelona was a nondescript race for McLaren, really. We didn't really see them on the screen very much in the broadcast. They weren't just there.
Yeah.
Although, you know, Lando finished in third.
Yeah, I mean, he was lucky. He in the background, he wasn't too far away from George and Kimi. As he said himself, he was watching them to see if they might fight and, you know, he'd get second or third or something. He said himself, he was lucky Kimi DNF'd, but he was never, in my opinion, looking like an actual threat to the guys. He was just there. He was keeping up with them, but he wasn't attacking. And Piastri was nowhere. I mean, Piastri ended up fifth, but again, that was just because of Kimi and because of Charles. As a massive Piastri fan, my heart's breaking for that guy. He won Barcelona last year. Like, where is the Piastri that we love and know? What's going on? I get the McLaren are struggling, but Norris, apart from a couple of DNFs, Norris is still getting up there, you know? I mean, there's not a huge point difference between the two of them, again, down to DNFs. But, like, Piastri just, it was underwhelming.
It was underwhelming. But with Piastri and McLaren, I feel like the car is just not there. And Oscar's just not able to get the results, or maybe he doesn't have the confidence in the car to really push. I felt really bad for him as well this weekend. It was just like, you're just having such a meh season, you know.
I know. Yeah. I mean, the only thing I think to myself is, thank God he is only in his, fourth season in McLaren. Thank God it's the beginning of his career, you know, because, again, he's the other person that I would find it very disappointing if they never got a championship. And I know that sounds like such a crazy thing to say about people. Like, obviously, they're all fighting for the ability to win a championship. But there are, in my opinion, naturally talented. There are the GOATs like Hamilton and Verstappen, who, in my opinion, they work a certain way. They're methodical. They're relentless. You know, they're going to win. And then there are other ones who are just this nicer kind of, they're talented, but then shit kind of happens to them. And that's the Charles and the Piastris who should win a championship at some point, but because of the fortunes of the world may not, you know what I mean? And that's, but I don't think that's true. I think Piastri will. And that's why I'm saying, I'm thank God he's only in his fourth season, you know, because I do think McLaren will bounce back. They may not bounce back this year, but I do think they will bounce back. And I think Piastri will bounce back. He's a solid talent.
And I think, never say never, as far as championships go. Yeah. I feel like, I'm with you. I feel like there's a championship in Charles. There's a championship there for Oscar. And there's definitely at least one championship there for Kimi Antonelli. Probably more. And Lewis. There's an eighth there for Lewis. I don't think Lewis will stop until he gets his eighth.
100% agree.
He's so driven. And that stems from his childhood, I'm guessing, because he grew up with every single odd stacked against him, you know, and copped a bunch of racism and the rest of it during his karting days. He came from a family of nothing. You know, his rise, still we rise, that's his tagline, right? His rise has been the stuff of legends, honestly. I don't think he'll stop until he has reached that immortal state of 8 world titles and the undisputed greatest of all time.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Yeah, I really do. And he is so happy and he feels so healthy. He constantly talks about it that I'm like, why would he stop? Fernando is still racing at 40, whatever, 5. I mean, obviously, I think Lewis needs to be winning and being in a space where he feels he's progressing forward. So I could see him going. I think if he got that 8th and he felt that there was still more in the tank with Ferrari, I could still see him going. But I agree. I think that 8th is, I think it's within reach. You know, you think it could be this year, and I do, but I think Kimi and Mercedes have something extra special. And I think Toto is a world champion winner from 8 times or whatever, because he's not going to just let Ferrari come along, you know? So it'll be interesting,
I would love to see the gap narrow and for the championship to be really close. Let's hope that that happens.
Oh my God.
The other driver I just wanted to mention, who also had a DNF. Well, there were several DNFs. So we've talked about Charles Leclerc. We've talked about Kimi Antonelli, whose car just conked out. Ollie Bearman had a DNF on lap 60. Mm. Alex Albon in the Williams. God, he's had a rough season, hasn't he? Poor Alex. Lap 55. Fernando Alonso in the Aston Martin, lap 37, DNF. Nico Hülkenberg's DNF on lap 29 was as a result of a piece of gravel being flicked up from the car in front of him. I think it might have been Hadjar. And that piece of gravel just happened to hit the kill switch at exactly precisely spot on, and it just stopped the car. I know, right? What are the chances? But that's what happened to him. Valtteri Bottas also DNF'd lap 15, and Lance Stroll in the Aston Martin. So two Aston Martin DNFs. He DNF'd on lap 5. Gosh, there's so many. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 DNFs.
Last week, here was me saying last week it was an anomaly. Oh my God, that's crazy.
This used to happen in Formula One in the old days where so many cars would just crash out and you wouldn't know how many cars would actually cross the finish line. And then the reliability was there, you know, to have two or three DNFs in one race. It was unusual to have two or three cars not finish, but
God, 8.
Yeah. Anyway, Hülkenberg, what were you going to say?
That's crazy. I was going to say, so Hülkenberg qualified P9. So he probably would have been P10 if Charles hadn't crashed in quali. But he qualified P9. So he's in the possibility of points, right? The gods saying that a flick of a stone hits the kill switch and knocks that poor ID out. And Bordoletto was 11. So like the two guys were so close to getting points. Oh, my heart breaks for Hülkenberg. That's awful.
I believe it was his first top 10 qualifying of the season.
That's just disappointing.
I know. Totally disappointing. Gutting.
Hadjar qualified P6. Then the start of the race had a mare, absolute mare, went down to P14. Then Manu spent the whole race. He did the most overtakes in the whole of the race. You can actually check it out on the desktop version of the app. But Hadjar had the most overtakes of all of the drivers and ended up back where he started at P6.
Amazing. Oh, there you go. Yeah. That's a little fun stat. Yeah. What else you got?
Carl Pinto got a penalty. He actually finished P8, and he got a penalty for safety car infringement. So he actually finished P10 or something like that. Lewis was nearly 20 seconds ahead when he finished, which is amazing. But no, the one thing I wanted to mention, so Formula One have got in a new rule because of the advantages that Mercedes had. And there's a change to the engine that Ferrari are bringing for Austria. And I think it's something called a duo or something. I'm not sure exactly. And this is where all the tech people can come and tell us in the comments. But Ferrari possibly are going to have an even bigger boost in 2 weeks' time. So that's something to watch out for. Very interesting. And they're not the only ones who get this, but they seem to be the ones bringing it, from what I've heard, next time in Austria. So ones to watch, you know?
Yeah. That's the combustion ratio that Mercedes have an advantage of because they found a loophole in the regulations. Whoa. That's exciting. Okay. For me, it was a very slow start to the race and then it really picked up and the result was nothing short of legendary. I'm still beaming. Like as soon as I got up this morning, I'm like, right, I'll put on all my Ferrari merch and I've been strutting around the house in it all day, feeling very smug. Congratulations to Lewis Hamilton. Well done. And to Ferrari. Great to see you back where you belong on the top step. It's brilliant. Well, next week is a non-race week, but I've got a fantastic interview lined up. And yes, so tune in next week for a very special guest. And then the week after, we are in Austria. So that'll be, it's a very picturesque, very beautiful part of the world in the middle of forest, really. There's not much around there. Nürburgring, Red Bull's home race. So it should be a cracking race.
Yeah, and I assume Red Bull will come back with vengeance. They usually do quite well there.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, predictions. Away We Go podcast. Predict the podium game was, no one picked Lewis to win. No one picked Lewis to win. I had Lewis in second place. A couple of people picked Lando third.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I put faith in Oscar. I had originally put Lando down and then I changed it to Oscar. Stupid me.
I actually chose Kimi, Lewis, Oscar myself. On the leaderboard, then we have, I'm still winning my own game. In second place is Simply Perfect. And in third place is Wishful Thinking on 86 points, tied with Rev Red on 86 points. Now, how do we go with Formula Life Pulse?
You go into the app and then you press the 3 little buttons on the right hand side, click on Pulse Predictions. And then you have to claim your points if you haven't already. I did pretty badly. I got 10.
Oh, I got 5. God, I predicted 3 DNFs. Jeez, that was well off the mark. I predicted, yeah, Kimi Lewis. I put Max for third in yours.
Yeah.
No, geez, I did really badly. How did you go?
Yeah, I got 10 points. The only thing I got right was I predicted Russell for free practice, one. And then I had Russell on my podium. So I got 5 points for him, but like I picked Oscar. I thought I had picked differently to what I did on Away We Go, but I actually picked very similar, except I had Russell, Oscar Piastri instead of Kimi, Oscar Piastri.
Yeah, I mean.
Fantastic. Well, okay. I think that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you very much for listening. You know, we love your comments. And if you don't agree with us, you can respectfully write a comment, and you can find us on YouTube, LinkedIn, TikTok, Threads, Facebook, Instagram, or you can drop us an email, hello@awaywegopodcast.com. We'll be back next week with a guest episode. And until then, and until lights out.
Are you ready? It's lights out and away we go.
Away We Go Podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto.